This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a number of the significant opportunities to break with the past and restore confidence in advance of the polls have been missed thus far. As a result, concerns remain about the fairness of the process.
That's Catherine Noon, deputy leader of the Irish Senate, saying Zimbabwe still faces challenges for its upcoming elections. Details coming up.
Also, a Kenyan teacher who was scheduled to be an assistant referee at the upcoming World Cup has quit after being caught up in a match-fixing sting operation. And robberies and kidnappings are on the rise in eastern Cameroon.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story: appeals judges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague today overturned the war crimes conviction of Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former vice president of the DRC. The ICC convicted him in 2016 of being responsible for atrocities committed by troops under his control in the Central African Republic. Prosecutors said Bemba was leading troops with the MLC, the Movement for the Liberation of Congo, that were operating in the CAR in 2002 and 2003. The troops were accused of rape, pillage, and murder. The appeals judges agreed with his lawyers, who argued that Bemba could not be held responsible for the actions of his soldiers.
A delegation of democracy advocates say Zimbabwe needs to pay attention to key factors if national elections next month are to be fair. Reporter Kuzai Zanwash has more details.
Delegates said Friday that Zimbabwe has an opportunity to break with its past in the July 30th election. Former U.S. Congressman David Dreyer is part of the delegation, which has been meeting all segments of society involved in the election process.
There are a number of concerns that we have heard about, voiced by a wide range of people here in Zimbabwe, and some of those things that have come to our attention include issues like dealing with polling stations, the printing of ballots, the military presence.
Two American democracy organizations, the International Republican Institute and National Democratic Institute, led the six-day delegation. Its members include political leaders from Africa, Europe, and the United States. Catherine Noon is the deputy leader of the Irish Senate. She says while there have been changes to Zimbabwe's political landscape, more is needed.
The IRI NDI delegation found notable improvements in the political environment and electoral preparations as compared to prior elections. However, a number of the significant opportunities to break with the past and restore confidence in advance of the polls have been missed thus far. As a result, concerns remain about the fairness of the process.
She adds that since Zimbabwe's current government rose to power through military intervention last November, it is essential to provide a fair playing field in the coming elections. The military ousted Robert Mugabe, who had ruled the country for 37 years. His former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is now president, and the ZANU-PF party they have led for decades remains in power. Past elections have featured political violence aimed at opposition supporters and strict government control of the media. Mnangagwa, however, has promised fair and peaceful elections. Noon touches on some of the recommendations the delegation has made.
To focus voter education on the secrecy of the vote, ensure military respect for election outcome, release both the preliminary and final voters' rolls in electronic format, provide equal access to media and information for opposition candidates, provide equal access to the media in general.
Other recommendations include transparency on the printing of the ballots and that all political parties adhere to the Electoral Commission's code of conduct and denounce political violence. In addition, the delegates say it's important that election observers be accredited on time. The recommendations capture the bulk of the complaints opposition parties have made in the past few months. Noon says the delegation will continue to observe Zimbabwe's election. The delegation says the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has reassured them that the voters' roll will be made available to political parties and individuals soon. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In South Africa, proceedings in the corruption case against former President Jacob Zuma have been delayed until July 27th. The 76-year-old politician faces 16 charges of fraud, racketeering, corruption, and money laundering. The charges are related to a $2.5 billion arms deal with the EU in the late 1990s when Zuma was a provincial official. Zuma told supporters gathered outside the High Court in Durban that the case should be dropped because he has done nothing wrong. He also hinted at a protracted legal battle, saying that people convicted of wrongdoing often appeal the verdict. Supporters say he's the victim of a political witch hunt. The former president's legal team has asked that proceedings be postponed until the question of his legal costs have been resolved. They have been covered by the government while he was president, but the opposition Democratic Alliance has asked for that support to end. Former African presidents are rarely prosecuted after leaving power, but South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa says fighting corruption is part of his plan to regain investors' trust and boost the slow-growing economy.
Robberies and kidnappings are on the rise in eastern Cameroon as violence from the neighboring Central African Republic spills across the border. Armed groups from the CAR have been stealing supplies and taking dozens of people hostage for ransom. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian town of Gawi.
Family members, friends and curious onlookers watch as two ambulances with 13 former hostages arrive at Ngawi, a town on Cameroon's border with the Central African Republic. Iya Gabdo, a cattle rancher, says armed men took him hostage 3 weeks ago after he could not pay the $5,000 they demanded. Gabdo says many of his peers were also kidnapped that day.
Nous on faisait de très mal, nous a laissé comme ça. On souffre seulement.
Gabdo says he and several others were left to suffer in an area they did not know. He says they had no option than to drink water from doubtful sources and were hardly served a meal a day. He says most of them are sick, either because they never had a bath or because they drank dirty water. The military freed Gabdo this past week, along with 13 others taken hostage. The military says one hostage was killed in the rescue and several were wounded. Several armed men were killed. Ngawi hosts one of the largest cattle markets on Cameroon's border with the CAR. The market was reduced to a shadow of itself 4 years ago when armed groups started crossing the border to attack and kidnap Cameroonian cattle ranchers and business people for ransom or to steal their properties. On several occasions, Cameroon sealed the border. In 2016, business resumed in border areas when new CAR president Faustin Archange Touadéra promised to bring peace to the troubled nation. But last year, the United Nations reported that fresh fighting involving armed groups in the CAR was leading to new waves of bloodshed and displacement. Kildadi Tagueke Buka, governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon, says that since the fighting erupted again, there have been increasing attacks in Cameroon's territory.
They kidnapped the chief of Akundere and asked him a ransom of 100 million. So I want to invite the population to continue cooperating, giving the information to the forces of law and order, to the administration, and think, I do hope, we are going to put an end to this kind of banditry.
The CAR descended into chaos after longtime leader François Bozizé was overthrown in 2013 by a predominantly Muslim rebel alliance called the Seleka. Christian militias called the Anti-Balaka emerged in response, accelerating a cycle of sectarian violence. Last month, the CAR's Minister of Humanitarian Activities visited Cameroon and said violence continues in our country because it is hard to control the circulation of arms or to bring the various armed factions together for true dialogue. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ngawi, Cameroon.
A Kenyan teacher who was scheduled to be an assistant referee at the upcoming World Cup has quit after being caught up in a match-fixing sting operation. The BBC released a documentary today on African soccer corruption that it says caught more than 100 referees taking money. Adele Range Marwa was the only Kenyan referee chosen to work the Moscow World Cup. The documentary says he accepted a $600 bribe from a BBC journalist posing as a Ghanaian soccer club official. Marwa has resigned. He would have gotten at least $25,000 for refereeing soccer's biggest event. FIFA had approved him for international matches since 2008. He worked the 2017 Confederations Cup, a World Cup warm-up event, and went to the Brazil World Cup as a backup official. The Ghana National Football Association has been dissolved after its president, Kwesi Nyantakyi, allegedly took a fake $65,000 bribe. FIFA banned a Ghanaian refugee, Joseph Lamptey, for life for awarding a penalty in a World Cup qualifying game in 2016 in a betting scam.
17 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The European Union has been struggling for 2 years to create a cohesive policy on migration. The increasing flow of asylum seekers and refugees from South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa has strained social services and fueled voter anger in Europe. EU ministers have spent the past few weeks trying to draft a proposal to present at the EU summit later this month. VOA journalist Jamie Detmer in Rome has been covering this issue closely. Speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson, he said it appears no deal is likely this year.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, I think the prospects are extremely dim and gloomy. I mean, no one thinks there's going to be a breakthrough now. And what's become more complicated, of course, is the resurgence of populists, symbolized in many ways by the populist coalition government in Italy. So we have the North Europeans in particular who've got their own domestic problems in terms of opposition to migrants and migration flows, also having to tiptoe around this as a political hot potato. They've got their own audiences who want swift resettlement of migrants on the whole back to where they came from. And then you've got now the populists in Italy who are threatening to deport up to 500,000 illegal migrants. And also want to change the asylum laws that they follow in Italy, which will bring them into collision with Brussels even before we talk about reform.
Now, the rise of the populists, as well as the economic concerns, the burden placed on a lot of the southern countries by this migrant inflows, is there any way the EU can work around any of this?
I'm not sure they can now. We have seen this week the signs of a common cause being formed between Italy and Hungary, for example. The Hungarians have been leading the charge among Central European states, including Slovakia and the Czech Republic, against the idea of relocating migrants from the southern European states. They've refused to accept them. This goes back to 2015. Now, on paper, it would look like Salvini, Matteo Salvini, the interior minister, would be against the Hungarians on this issue because he wants to see the migrants that they don't deport relocated to other European member states. But on the broad front, Salvini and Viktor Orban of Hungary appear to be making common cause against the whole kind of issue of migration and wanting to change the rules fundamentally. They want to stop migration inflows completely.
In other words, they're looking to basically upend the asylum process that has been in place since World War II?
Yes, they are. I mean, it's been very clear in their manifesto, the Lega, which is one of the coalition partners in the Italian government, has said it wants to truncate, that's to shorten the asylum process and to make it very much speedier and more different so that they can adjudicate quickly and decide very quickly who can stay and who can go. As one can expect, the speedier you make the process, the less likely it is that they will accept the asylum application. I mean, that's their plan. So we are, yes, going to see, I suspect, over the next few weeks and months, a real battle between Brussels and Rome about going back, really, on international treaties that date back, as you said, to the end of the Second World War, to the 1950s.
And that was VOA journalist Jamie Detmer in Rome, speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson.
A Minnesota teenager is the first American to win the prestigious Dubai International Quran Recitation Contest. For VOA, Mahmoud Masadeh has the story from Minneapolis.
Ahmed Burhan Muhammad received a hero's welcome on his return to Minnesota. After the 16-year-old topped more than 100 competitors at the Dubai International Quran Recitation Contest.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. They told me I was top 10, but I didn't know what place I was going to get, so alhamdulillah.
Muhammad is the first American to win the $68,000 prize. Joining the Somali American at the top of the ranks was a strong showing by Africans, with the contestants from Libya, Tunisia, and Algeria placing second, third, and fourth, respectively.
The competition was very competitive. I was competing with 103 contestants from all around the world, some of them countries I never have heard of in my life, Caribbean islands, all over, everywhere.
Muhammad came to the United States when he was 2 years old and credits his parents and teachers with helping him win the 22nd edition of Dubai contest, which is one of the most prestigious in the Muslim world. Muhammad says he started studying the Quran when he was 7 and memorized the entire text within 5 years. Muhammad's father, Burhan Muhammad Ilmi, says all the help for his son has paid off.
We put a lot of effort into helping him, and the teachers put in huge efforts as well.
Sheikh Abdirsaq Hashi is the imam of Abu Bakr Islamic Center, where Muhammad studied. He says the win in Dubai is a huge achievement for all Muslim Americans.
The American media is proud of Burhan's win. All we want as a community was to show Americans that they can be proud of us, and this win shows that we have achieved that accomplishment. Now we are hoping Americans see the goodness of Islam and Muslims as well as the quality of American Muslims living in the U.S.
Ahmed Burhan Muhammad will enter his final year of high school later this year, and says he hopes to become a doctor. Mahmoud Mas'adi for VOA News, Minneapolis.
A global report by Save the Children reveals progress made in helping to promote children's health, education, and protection in sub-Saharan Africa. But it also found that in many countries, problems linked to poverty, conflict, and discrimination against girls are robbing young people of their chance to prepare properly for adulthood and better lives. The group's conclusions are found in a recent report called End of Childhood, The Many Faces of Exclusion, which includes an index ranking children's well-being in 175 countries around the world. From Washington, reporter William Eagle has the story.
Save the Children's 2018 End of Childhood Index shows that slightly more than half of the 49 sub-Saharan nations surveyed had made improvements over the previous year in child school registration, nutrition, and health care. Among the countries in this group are Uganda, coming in at number 130, Somalia, 170, and Sierra Leone, number 167. Despite the gains, Tunisia, at number 48, is the only sub-Saharan nation in the top 50 in the rankings, and half were in the bottom 30, with Niger at number 175, the very last. Almost all of the worst-performing states suffer from three key factors that most harm children: poverty, conflict, and discrimination against girls. Those include Burkina Faso, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Somalia, Chad, Mali, and Niger. South Sudan is rated the fifth worst out of the 175 nations surveyed, with the highest rate of children out of school in the world, 67%, and the second highest rate of displacement globally, that is, 31% displaced. It's also among the nations with the highest rates of child marriage at 40%. Eric Hazar is Save the Children's Advocacy Director for West and Central Africa. He says, despite its economic power, Nigeria's battle in the northeast against the Boko Haram militants has harmed its children.
So, for example, if you take the state of Borno in northern Nigeria, which is one of the states which is affected by the conflict, there is more than 1,400 schools which have been destroyed in Borno, and there is currently close to 60% of the schools who are closed. This means access to education as a fundamental right for children is seriously at risk today in a couple of northern states in Nigeria.
He says gender discrimination in the north means large numbers of girls are denied education, and Nigeria has one of the highest rates of child marriage in the world. The effects of early marriage show up in population growth. Save the Children says globally, given that child marriage rates are not falling much, the number of adolescent pregnancies is set to grow, with the largest increases expected in Africa. African governments and education systems already are struggling to keep up with population growth. Hazar notes that in Africa, more than one out of five children aged 6 to 11 are out of school, one of the worst rates in the world, even though some countries, such as Niger, are improving access to education.
If you take a country like Niger, which is the last one in the ranking, we can see that there is a couple of progress which have been done in Niger to ensure that children can get access to schools. But when you see the investment which have been done last year and the previous year, I think the number of schools which have been built just represent a third of the needs to respond to the existing gap or the current gap, which means that when you try to invest into some basic infrastructure to try to absorb the gap, you are even not able to anticipate some further needs in a country where the population is doubling every generation, so every 20 years.
Save the Children makes several recommendations for improving the lives of children. For example, it says girls could be given scholarships and free transportation so they can get safely to school. It encourages governments to adopt action plans to boost national resources by improving tax systems or shifting budget priorities to eliminate child poverty. Save the Children says without urgent action, the world will not meet the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which aim to ensure that by 2030, every child survives, learns, and is protected. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.